97.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
You are listening to Radio Reverb. This is the Brighton Business Show. My name is Helen Packham and I'm with my co-host Lisa Moore. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Helen. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. This show is available to listen to on 97.2 FM, on your DAB radio, or to download and listen to as a podcast. And we're working in partnership with Friday Ad and Friday Media Group, who are supporting local business. And this month, we have a really, really great show lined up for you. It has a charity theme. We really wanted to explore and showcase some of the amazing work that charities are doing within the local area and the surrounding areas. So on this month's show, we have Michael Ryan, who is the CEO of the Now Charity Group, which consists of Furniture Now and Community Now. We have Caroline Matanley, who is a corporate community fundraiser for Whoops-a-Daisy. And we have Rick Ackers, who is the founder of Justice for Reggie. So I'm really, really looking forward to speaking to these wonderful people today for the Brighton Business Show. But before that, how are you doing, Lisa? Because it's been a while since we've done a show together, hasn't it, over the summer?
It has been a while. It has been a while. It feels like a very long time since we've had a chance to have a chat on the show.
Always difficult with summer holidays and children and things like that. But what's been happening for you over the summer?
Well, I've been waiting for the summer for a very long time. And I think it finally arrived, didn't it, at the weekend. I've had a couple of days of sunshine. But yeah, I've had a transition. My eldest daughter has started sixth form college. So that's interesting. And her timetable's quite interesting because she's not going in until 11 o'clock today. So that's very nice, isn't it?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Well, yeah, that's been the biggest change for me over the summer is that, you know, leaving school, getting GCSEs and then going to sixth form.
Wow, that is a big transition.
Starting to get out there face to face and meet people and do things.
What's that been like?
It's been really great. And, you know, I mean, Helen, you know, you are a speaker coach and I do quite a lot of public speaking. And I was invited to go and speak at a local hospice to try and help motivate their runners, some of whom were running in the Brighton Marathon this past weekend. And actually, I was really nervous because I haven't stood up in front of people face to face for about 2 years now. So the nerves really kicked in.
Oh, wow. What was that like, though?
Do you know, it was lovely. It was really lovely. And it was just so nice to get that feeling again of speaking in front of people and also chatting to people. And you love it because of the stories, hearing everybody's personal story about why they were running the marathon, what they'd done in the past, how they'd done it, how they coped. Yeah, it was really nice.
Fantastic thing to do. Yeah, I've been doing a lot more of that over the summer, going out and connecting with people, both socially and professionally. And it just fills the soul, doesn't it? It just makes you feel so much more enriched connecting with loads of people. I've been to quite a few concerts and festivals and things like that, and done quite a lot of DJing, which has been amazing. And have created this assessment for my clients, which is...
I've seen this. It looks really, really good. Yeah, yeah. You've been busy, busy.
Well, it's just something from just working with clients. As you say, I'm a speaker coach. I help people with verbal communications. And I just wanted to create something that they could take like a temperature check of where they are now and a visual representation with like an action plan of where they want to be. So that kind of hit me, that idea sort of hit me a few months ago, but I've been creating that between the kids, looking after the kids in the summer holidays, and I've launched that now. But it's been a lovely summer, but it's been a crazy summer. And but I'm glad that we're getting back into the swing of things now. I bet you are too, right?
I am. And actually, I just realised there was something else that I achieved over the summer months, was I qualified as a certified life coach.
Oh, did you?
All about that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Who did that with?
It was with an organisation called Ecology. and have been doing some really great sessions with their team practicing, and it's been really good. So getting out there and starting to work with, especially women, actually women that are either on their way to burnout or have reached that point of burnout, and helping them to reassess their life so that they can cope in the workplace and they can cope at home.
Well,
It's been really good fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
you are the best person for that to
Oh,
help
thank
you with that. Now,
you.
that's really exciting. So it's incredible when you actually stop and think, oh, actually, no, I have achieved quite a lot
Yeah.
over this. But today is, I think it's really, really great that we're doing this today. So obviously we work in partnership with Friday Ad. And so Rick and Michael work in conjunction with Friday Ad. So we're going to be talking more about that. But I am now going to start by speaking to my first guest, who is Michael Ryan, and he is the CEO of Now Charity Group. Welcome to the Brighton Business Show, Michael.
Hello, Lisa.
Great to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on. I've been reading up about what you do, and it's super interesting. And I think for all the listeners across Brighton and Hove, it's a really, really important thing to hear about because you don't necessarily know about these things that are happening. So, first of all, Michael, tell us a bit about, I guess, about what it is that you do and what led you to become the CEO for the Now Charity Group.
Sure. So Now Charity Group is a really interesting background. And if you're anything like me and have a particular interest in history, you'll be quite engrossed in it. So the concept of Furniture Now, which was our original entity, actually began in the town of Lewes in 1993, very much as a grassroots project. A group of environmental activists known as the Common Cause Cooperative that resided in the town recognised that Lewes back in 1993 is perhaps a very different place to most people's perception of Lewes today. And that the levels of poverty within the town was just unacceptable. So being these grassroots activists, they went and bought a milk float of all vehicles and just began running voluntary shifts in and around the town, picking up furniture at the side of the road and dropping it at houses in need. Then over a 2-year period, demand for Furniture Now grew. And in 1995, it established itself as a registered charity. And then in 25 years since then, the charity as a whole has undergone a variety of different changes, none more so than in 2015, when we evolved to become the Now Charity Group and we split off into two arms. So we've maintained Furniture Now, albeit that it's a slightly different entity now in that it is a retail-based entity. And we've had Community Now, which is about using all of the surplus which is generated from Furniture Now and then redistributing to various different voluntary groups and other charities located in the East Sussex area. We are slightly different to other more traditional charities in that we are a non-profit social enterprise. So all of the income that we generate is self-sufficient. We aren't reliant on cake sales and marathon runners and more traditional charitable operating fundraisers. We operate slightly more with a business model really. And that gives us that self-sustaining income generation model and also allows us to be more flexible with how we then redistribute those monies into the local community through Community Now.
Right. So I always, think about how that actually works. And you say, I think this was the first third sector role. Is that right?
That's right. Yep. So prior to working as a CEO at Now Charity Group, I had quite a varied working history. So I began working for the Football Association. One of my passions is sport and in particular football. So I had a great working period of 5 years working for the FA, particularly focusing on children and young people strategy, working with young people aged 18 to 25, and in some cases up to 30, depending on the UN's definition of a young person. Once I finished at the Football Association, I then worked in London for a period of time, then thought, actually, I'm a person with a very strong social conscience, very much believe in supporting working class families, hardworking people. And the Now Charity Group just fit that mould. And whether it was a third sector organisation or something in the private sector, just the values that the organisation had really appealed to me.
That's wonderful. So Tell us a little bit more about the fundamentals of the business and how it actually works now.
Yeah, absolutely. So Furniture Now, as I say, is a retail-based element. So we have retail sites located in Lewes, Eastbourne and Howsham, all of which sell both new and second-hand furniture and electrical items, very much like any other shop-based entity that the public can come in and out 6 days a week and buy it as they choose. But we also work with a variety of different commercial partners as well. So we have arrangements in place with housing associations, local authorities, NHS trust sites to furnish, be it social housing properties or just any form of residential property that might need some form of support. And the basis of Furniture Now is very much about making life more affordable for people, whether they be your traditional concept of welfare, so universal credit recipients, or people that we are particularly passionate about, which is that category in society of just about managing. Within the UK, there's approximately 6 million households that fall into that just about managing category, tend to be on low to middle incomes, but just don't qualify for any form of additional financial support. And life is very, very difficult. The cost of living is rising exponentially year on year. And it's difficult. Where do you go? You know, these people may not necessarily be able to afford to go to a more traditional furniture or electrical outlet. So they're looking for that respectable, high quality of life, but at an affordable price. And that's where Furniture Now fits into the market. And we serve that course admirably.
Yeah. So when I was looking at what you were saying about that, it's classed as working poverty, right? That's the term that's described as that you say just about managing. You say that can be sometimes a controversial or it's...
Yeah, I think it's just not a particularly attractive subject for traditional charities to touch on. You know, there are considerable amount of charities that will focus on the real sharp end of poverty. So you're homeless, you're people that are on universal credit, you know, you're the people that people perceive to be on the real sharp end of poverty. Charities are set up to do that. Local authorities are well placed to support those people. But then, as I say, you do have this cohort within society that are classed as just about managing, that can't access charitable support, can't access local authority support. You know, they've got huge amounts of responsibilities, be that children, mortgages, etc. And life is very, very difficult. And there is just nowhere for these people to turn. As I say, cost of living is rising all of the time, and they are just looking for affordability, combining that with a respectable quality of living. And that's where I believe Furniture Now fits particularly well, because for many of us, we take for granted having essential household items within our properties, you know, your beds, your sofas, your cookers, your real essential items. And that's none more so been seen over the last 12, 18 months during the pandemic, when people have been forced to spend lots and lots of time living at home. And so that priority of having a good, respectable quality of living at home has been a priority none more so than ever before, really.
And how does the stock move through? So where do you receive stock from?
Yep. So secondhand items are collected via a free household collection service that operates 6 days a week. So we'll travel the length and breadth of East and West Sussex, as I say, conducting these household collections. And as a result of that, we have a real strong environmental impact theme that runs through what Furniture Now tries to achieve, particularly in the amount of items we save from entering landfill and the CO2 emissions that are saved as a result of that. And then from a new stock perspective, we will typically source items from an array of different wholesalers and suppliers. So we have an agreement in place with Whirlpool, who supply all of our electrical and appliance-based items, and then agreements with bed suppliers and sofa suppliers and traditional furniture suppliers to stock the remainder of those items. But as I say, the real strong theme of everything that Furniture Now does is just making life more affordable.
So how do you, just in terms of thinking about, you know, listeners and the concept of business, right, in terms of how you market that, how do you get the word out about that to people that service, that free collection service, which is absolutely incredible, is available to them?
Just like any organisation, really, we use a variety of different marketing tools. So we have your traditional social media platforms, so your Instagrams, your Facebooks, your Twitters, your LinkedIns, etc. And that promotes to a digital audience that may already be following what we do or are keen to follow what we do online. We do some more traditional grassroots-based marketing, be that through leaflet drops and articles in local newspapers, etc. And I'm sure in a second we'll touch more so on the impact that Friday Media Group have had on what we do. But Tinker, Rob and Beth and the team have been great since we launched that partnership with Friday Media Group, and more specifically with Friday Ad. They've been great in terms of a marketing support partner for us, because obviously mm-hmm. their audience is huge in Sussex. You know, they're a real bread and butter business in the county. So we've been really grateful for all of the support that they provide in terms of raising our profile as well.
So let's talk about that, because I think a lot of people don't necessarily, when they think of Friday Ad, they think of the traditional, you know, the copy, the hard copy of ads, and maybe some online listings. But what is it that, because it's really evolved in terms of how Friday Ad can help local businesses and charities. What does it look like for you?
Interesting, because the link with Friday Media Group came out of the blue just before the pandemic struck, and it was an exciting partnership for us. You know, a big business in the Sussex network, well established in the communities that we like to serve. So we just began meeting, as I say, with Rob, Beth, and Tinker, and just sharing ideas about how we could support Friday Media Group in terms of their social impact, and how they could in turn support us with raising our profile. And the strong theme that was coming out from our conversations is, one, that environmental impact, to stopping items that are initially listed on Friday Ad that aren't bought by members of the public from then entering into landfill. So instead of that, hasn't sold, I'm going to take that down and take it to the tip. So I'm posting them towards people like us that may be able to then collect those items and stop that from taking place. And then we had the digital aspect. So at that time, we didn't have any presence via an online shop functionality. It was all very much face-to-face, people coming into the stores and buying in person. And through the Friday Ad partnership, that was our first dip into the digital shop water, really. And Beth, Tinker and Rob came to our sites, delivered a training session with our store managers around how they can utilise the online shop, how to upload items, take items off, raise the profile of particular items. And that support was great, because prior to me coming on board at Now Charity Group, that digital presence just didn't exist really.
So what does it look like then? Is it literally a shop front, a digital shop front, where people can browse the furniture that is available in stock and purchase it online?
That's right. Yeah. So the shop functionality was something that we launched from the beginning. People can access the shop either directly via the Friday Ad website or via our own website, which then relocates onto the Friday Ad page. And that was a strong element of the partnership that was launched. So it was threefold, really. It was the Friday Ad online shop. It was, how can we stop items that aren't sold via Friday Ad from entering landfill? And then the third one being, how can they raise the profile of Now Charity Group? And we had various different advertisement banners that existed on the website, hard copy advertising that went into the physical Friday Ad booklets. And that's proved brilliant, and you know, we give a lot of thanks to the team.
That's fantastic. And I know that, as you say, if you're like a sort of brick and mortar business, you have a shop, you have a physical shop, and you haven't ever really ventured into that online space, it can just really open up so much in terms of reach and accessibility, and people finding out about what you can do, ease of access, all of those sorts of things. So that's that platform that is available to other, you know, to other businesses and other charities in the local area, is absolutely fantastic. So what's next for you guys then? What's happening in the next few months? Have you got anything coming up that people could hear about?
Yeah, so it is an exciting period for Now Charity Group. So on the Furniture Now front, we are moving our Wealden-based operations to a new site. So anyone who is familiar with our existing furniture now operations in Wealden will know that, that it's always been traditionally much smaller than the operations in Lewes and Eastbourne. But through the specific partnership that we have with Wealden District Council, the demand for what we do across the Wealden area has grown significantly. And that has prompted us to move into a much larger property. Still in the town of Howsham, so we aren't leaving the town of Howsham, but we will be in a much larger unit. And we're currently going through the process of signing off the lease on that. And we're hoping for a pre-Christmas launch date, all being well. So very much watch this space on that. And then the second exciting aspect of what we have at the moment is just our offer to students. So we're very much an organisation that supports young people and wants to make life affordable for young people as well, particularly those that are going to university for the first time. And those that are moving into private rented accommodation, not necessarily on site at student dorms, can access discounts and various different offers via Furniture Now as well. So we're not just an organisation for families outside of studying age, we're an organisation that's there for students as well.
Really fantastic. Imagine how many students would absolutely jump at that. So really, really great to hear. So how can people access this information? Where can they go online to find out more?
Yes, so both Now Charity Group and Furniture Now have their own specific platforms. So anyone who wants to find out more about the broader stuff that Now Charity Group does and our governance and history, etc., can log on to nowcharity.org.uk. And those that are looking for our specific Furniture Now services can access our specific Furniture Now website, which is furniturenow.org.uk.
Awesome.
It's amazing, and I didn't know the breadth and depth that it went. And when you mentioned the students then just now, I think that's just an incredible thing to do. Because I mean, you go down to Brighton and you look at the university and how it's growing and everything they're putting together. But, you know, I've had two nephews that have gone through university and struggled with, you know, having a mattress on the floor and all that sort of stuff because they couldn't afford it. You know, they couldn't afford to go and buy a nice bed. Yeah, I think it's incredible. And, you know, there are a lot of families out there. And I guess I've been in that situation of, you know, being a single mom with two kids, trying to pay all the bills, and you go over the threshold of where you get help. But there's that middle ground of you don't get any help anymore, but you can't earn the money that you need. And so it is literally, it's that whole hand to mouth. And, you know, I lived that way for quite a long time and still do on occasions. And I didn't realise that, you know, you were available. So I wish I had known a few years ago because it would have made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Well done. Brilliant.
Completely. And really great that the listeners of the Brighton Business Show can hear as well. So thank you so much, Michael, for coming on the show today. It was really, really great to have you on.
Thanks very much.
Radio Reverb.
7.2
Radio Reverb.
You are listening to the Radio Reverb Brighton Business Show 97.2 FM, available on DAB Radio and to download as a podcast, working in partnership with Friday Ad and Friday Media Group, supporting local business. And I'm really, really excited to also talk to my next guest, who is also in connection with Friday Ad, and his name is Rick Ackers. Rick, welcome to the Brighton Business Show.
Are you okay? Thanks for having me.
Really great to have you on, Rick. Now, you founded a charity called Justice for Reggie. There is a story behind your business, and I'd love to hear what that story is and what led you to creating what you have.
Yeah, so we're not actually a charity or a campaign. We didn't set up as a charity. We don't accept any donations or anything like that. What happened before Christmas, my family wanted, we wanted a dog for years. So I went out and I bought a Labrador just before Christmas. I asked all the right questions on the phone. I got to the seller's house and things started changing. So as these things started changing, he had this Labrador, cute little Labrador, jumping all over me, and I kind of fell in love with the dog. So I took it against my better nature. I should have said no, like this isn't coming from the right place. 2 days after it died of parvovirus, it cost us £4,000 in vet bills and for the dog. So it was quite a large amount just before Christmas. It wasn't a Christmas present. It was just the right time for our family. And seeing my little boy in that way. And my partner, Alicia, put a Facebook status on saying what had happened. And then we got a lot of people coming forward saying it's happened to them too. So we started this campaign to raise public awareness. And it's kind of gone from strength to strength. So we just wanted to advise people for when you're doing your, when you're buying animals, make sure you do your checks. Like there's a lot of unscrupulous people out there who'll take advantage of you. Like Reggie was puppy firm, come across in awful conditions and didn't have his vaccinations. So on the off chance, I contacted a few websites, one being Friday Media Group, and I got through to Tinker, who we had a meeting with, and we just got talking about how things can change on the pet selling site, because they're often similar to if you're selling a coach for a wardrobe. And I think selling a live animal, there should be more checks in place. So that's where we've come from and what we're doing.
Okay. Thank you. So for those that don't know, you know, I think, you know, I'm sorry to hear about what happened to you. You know, it's incredibly sad, but also very inspiring that you've taken this action and that you're doing what you're doing now. But for those that don't know, because, for example, for me, I am looking in the near future to get a dog, right? But I'm not yet at the stage of doing research. So what is it that, in terms of the issues that are out there, that people can potentially face? So we could start with that in terms of what the challenges are, what's actually happening.
Yeah. So one thing we're seeing is fake mums. So what one thing we advise of is when you buy a puppy under 6 months, you see the pup interacting with a mum. So what people are doing, they're bringing a large amount of dogs over from Romania, Ireland, transporting them and using one mum to represent all the mums. So it's like kind of like a fake mum. So when you go to the property, think, is that pup interacting with mum like it should do? Reggie's mum wasn't there because it was COVID time and the buyer said he was moving house, and it kind of made a story what fit the situation. Another thing is ring the vets. So I rang the vets and check the vet card. Mine was fake. If I had checked it through, I probably would have left Reggie there. So when you get a dog, it comes with obviously a chip number and a vet card. Make sure you get that and check the vets. But what we're seeing now at the minute is a lot of people obviously breeding because of COVID, they're short of money, and doing it wrong and doing it badly, really. And obviously the injections haven't been done. So 8 weeks you're meant to have an injection for parvovirus, and then again at 12 weeks. And we're seeing less and less this being done because people don't know what they're doing.
Could you pronounce that virus again? I haven't actually heard of that.
Sorry, no, neither have I since before December. Parvovirus it is. It's an intestinal virus, and it kind of takes over all the functions of the body. And it like with Reggie, if I could show you pictures, it was horrible. It was in such a bad way. And I wouldn't wish that on any person or any animal, really.
And these types of viruses are being contracted due to the conditions that the puppies are being born and raised in and not having their proper vaccinations?
Yeah, so there's two ways you can get parvovirus. It's either, obviously, your mum's milk is a protector. So when you're took away from your mum, so young like Reggie was, that's obviously a contributor. And also your vaccination, you have a vaccination at 8 weeks, what protects you? Reggie didn't have that. So and also dirty conditions, so it's a bit bad, but other dogs' feces and things like that. Reggie was crammed in back of a car with multiple other dogs. Cages not cleaned out for days, and that's obviously a really bad condition for living. And these people are making so much money that the more dogs they get in back of the car or in back of the van, the more money they can make.
That's horrendous. That's just so awful to hear. And I can imagine, as you say, that in COVID, within lockdown, the demand for pets has just soared. And so this problem's being exacerbated by that demand.
Yeah, so what we found is that one person was sold upwards of 230 dogs across all websites last year. And before that, it was more like 40. So the average price of a dog before COVID was £600 to £800. Now they're £2,000 to £2,500. Mm. And the more and more people realise this, the more and more people are getting involved and moving from other illegal trades to puppy farming because there's no consequences in it.
and sadly, Rick, it this has been going on for a while, but I think you're absolutely right. It's been growing because, you know, we were all at home in lockdown and people wanted to go out walking and thought, oh, how lovely to have a dog. But I remember I was looking for a puppy years ago and went to visit, took my daughter with me, and she was like, mommy, can we have it? Can we have it? And I asked all the right questions and had sort of experience of having dogs in the past, in the gun dog world, actually, so understood kennel club and all that stuff. And I asked to see the mother, and they said, oh, well, she's out feeding the pups in the shed in the garden. And I said, well, can I go out into the garden and have a look at her feeding the pups? So, oh, well, no, you can't really do that right now. And they literally had just bought the puppy in the house. And I walked away with my daughter in tears because, you know, she wanted the puppy, but it didn't feel right. But it was very, very hard to leave that pup there because, yeah.
And that's what these people know. It's an emotional trade. Like, I knew I shouldn't have bought Redview. I knew I shouldn't have taken him from that house. I knew I was funding puppy farming. But it's this play on your emotions so much. And when they get you in that environment, they just know you're going to take the dog. And yeah, if I'm honest, he could have told me all the truth and what had happened, and I would have still took Reggie. And like I said, I commend you, because I think if I had my little lad there, I couldn't have walked away. I don't know how you've done that. He must have been so strong. And
it was very hard to drive all the way home with her in tears. Really, really was. But, you know, the great thing was that I then went to see another puppy who is still with me now, and he's 11 years old, a working Cocker Spaniel who is fabulous. And he had all the paperwork, and the mum was there, and the puppies were there, and they were happy for me if I wanted to see the father. So yes, you know need to have that. And there are a lot of people out there that are doing it right, and you know, sadly, there are a lot of people out there that aren't. But you know, you can argue that people are struggling trying to find money and things like that, but I feel for you, Rick, I really do.
Yeah, so I think one thing I should note is that we do take complaints. So we set up an information sharing with Pets of Homes Friday ads and a lot of others. So what we're doing is gathering information on all these bad ads and sharing it at the back office. And one thing I can say, we had a lot of complaints off a big other selling website, but we've never received one complaint off Friday ads at the minute. Tinker and Paul, who I speak to, are doing amazing work. So we're working on a generalised checklist, what will go out across every selling site. And I think what Friday ads are doing are really good. So we meet probably once every 3 weeks, once every month with Tinker and Paul. We do it on an individual basis. Now we do it as a website around the table. And the passion they show for animal welfare, and the Tinker herself, that's messing with quite a lot. And if it was billed for a time, I wouldn't like think how much I offer had the ads. So they are taking it serious, and they do speak to us a lot on obviously on my experience and how they can make it a better selling experience, because they're only a classified ad selling site. They don't need to do these things. There's no law about saying they need to do it, but Friday ads are going up above and beyond, really, and doing things for animal welfare. So we can't, like, just to send an email to a big company like them and obviously others we're working with, and them to open the door and have meetings with us, it's just amazing, really, and listen to our opinions, really.
That's fantastic. So when thinking about this then, so from a buyer's perspective, so people that are looking to buy a dog or a pet, and we've been through the things to check there, which is really, really helpful. So in terms of always seeing the mother, looking at the environment, having all the paperwork, those types of things. So from a seller's perspective now, if we're thinking about preventing buyers from gaining access to these types of people who don't have these things in place, you say that there's checklists. So for example, Friday Ad, they would have a checklist for anyone wanting to advertise puppies on the Friday Ad.
No, that's a really good idea, actually. We don't have anyone for sellers, but that's just it. That will be my head. I never even considered that. So maybe maybe you come up with the next big thing. But we have got one for buyers, which will go to with every advert. So when you go on to buy a puppy, you'll get a checklist. We're working with it with Friday ads. Hopefully it'll be on every advert by the start of October. So when you click on that advert, it'll come up with a buyer's checklist. And you have to read through each one of them points, tick it off before you can make contact with the seller. And that's what we're working with all the other, it's called the Website Alliance, what we made up. and we also have a generalised checklist for buyers, but we've not one for sellers. So obviously you just give us a massive idea that we've never thought of.
Thinking of like, I guess you're thinking about prevention of people just freely, you know, trading in this way, that actually having some stop gaps in place, some conditions in place would hopefully prevent those that really aren't trading in ethical ways that have the dogs' welfares at heart, would actually prevent them from advertising and so therefore prevent people from buying them, or help them to get those things in place so that they can do things ethically and they can do things with you know, the animals' welfare in mind.
Yeah, so one thing I've come across, and I don't like to generalise, but a lot of bad breeders want to be bad breeders.
Right.
So the only thing we can do is obviously catch these people, and that's what we're doing with Animal Protection Services and setting up the reporting platform. There is a small amount who don't know what they're doing. They just thought, oh, I can make a bit of money out of breeding my puppy. But a lot of these people are organised crime. They've got multiple ads across multiple different selling platforms. So we do need to educate, but I think what we, like I said, I don't want to genericise the situation, but a lot of bad sellers do want to be bad sellers, and they're only doing it for the money. Not like if I was breeding the dogs, the first thing I'd have in back of my mind was obviously the dog's welfare and the puppy's welfare. But these people, when there's Labradors breed up to 9 to 12 puppies at £2,000 a time, it's a year's wage in one litter, and people are feeding the dogs pig hormones so they can get 4 litres a year out of them, 3 and 4 litres a year. So that's what we've seen as well. Sorry, that's just this is my dog telling me off. So what we've seen is that happening. And what my aim is to do is educate the public. And when you go in, like Lisa said before, you know that it's not right. Like, I knew it wasn't right to take Reggie. You're not saving that dog, you're funding the problem. And that's what needs to happen. These people need to be taken out and not be bought from and not be funded.
Yeah. Well, you're doing amazing work, and just hearing what you're doing with Friday Ad is fantastic. How else are you getting the word out? So from my perspective, in terms of the business that I run, it's all about helping people to share their stories. And of course, your story is the thing that's driven what you do. So how else are you getting the word out to people?
We meet with MPs a lot. We do a lot. We've got a petition online, which is to regulate animal selling sites as well, which is at 62,000 within 2 months. We're also doing a lot of events. We meet with local rescues. We've got 110 rescues. We have a charity evening every month where we discuss problems and how we can advise MPs, and obviously DEFRA, which is over the animal welfare legislation and government, have meetings with the Home Office about dog theft and things like that. But we're also looking to go into schools as well.
Oh, that's fantastic, Rick. And this has all happened since Christmas.
Yeah, so this was set up in the last week of December, and it's just gone, like I said, we'd had so many people come into us. But we've also got volunteers. We've got 14 volunteers, so we're part of a big team, which obviously I lead, but I couldn't do it without any of them, really. We do a lot of media work, and we've been on BBC and ITV and things like that, and it's just people's got a real interest. And I think when you mention dogs and animals and pets, it touches the heart of the nation, so we're in a strong position to push for change and push for better, really. Like I said, we're just setting up a school initiative now, which I believe is going out in Sussex in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So we'll be going into 2 schools, delivering a programme and trying to educate young adults when buying a pet, and obviously what a pet entails, because I've got 2 dogs, it should have been 3, and 2 is just driving me up the wall at the minute. So I wouldn't have thought what 3 did, but I'd love for having it back. But it is a big task having a pet. It's like having another child. So it's not just about buying it, it's about caring for it and what it takes. Because what we are seeing is a lot of these animals being given up and resold online, and that develops behavioural issues within an animal. So we've seen one animal this year be sold 3 times on a selling platform. Uh-huh. And then when that's getting to a rescue centre, it's developing anger issues and obviously nervousness and just worried where it's going to go next. And it's not good for these animals. So I say I won't give my dogs up for no one or nothing. So what a lot of people are doing, and when they've paid so much during the pandemic, they want the money back. And we're trying to encourage them, if you don't need the money, try and find it give it to rescue because they'll find it their forever home. Yeah. And we just don't want to be resold.
That's another really, really important point there, you know, in terms of dogs, you know, going from home to home, being resold, developing behavioural issues, ending up in rescue. That's another like really, really, really important thing you're doing. It's so inspiring what you're doing. And it's actually like you've achieved so much. You're talking to some incredible people to really get the word out about this, some media coverage as well. And it's really touched me hearing about this. And it's really, really made me think about, you know, when I am ready, which I'm not at the moment, because I understand I really, I've got two children and my son is part dog anyway, but he's just got so much energy that I'm, you know, it's something that is such a serious, important decision to make. So, Rick, how can people get in touch with you? How can they find out more about what you're doing? How can they get involved if they want to volunteer, if they want to get involved? What? How can they reach you?
Yes, we have got a petition live on our Facebook page. So it's just Justice for Eddie on Facebook. And I will ask everyone to sign the petition. It's to regulate animal websites and to make the rules, because we're working with 11 at the minute. We want to spread that so we work with them all, and they're all working with us. So we're all following a strict guidelines. We also are on Twitter, Justice for Edgy 01, Instagram, Justice for Edgy 2020, and we also got a website, www.justiceforedgy.co.uk, where you can read our aims and our objectives. And if you do agree with them, then you can send your local MP a letter. We've got a ready-made letter over there, what we'd like to see pushed through government this year. And you can send that to your MP and tell him about Redgie's Law, which is something what we hope to bring in before the new year.
Fantastic.
That's such a good idea. I'm sure I shall be going on there and sending off that petition, Rick, definitely.
Me too. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Rick. It was really, really moving and inspiring to hear your story. I really, really appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Radio Reverb. Shush now, I'm doing a trailer. For the Folkhampton Radio Show, it's every Thursday from 5 p.m. here on Radio Reverb. My name is Chris Thorpe Tracy, and I will play you an hour of folk, trad, psych, great songwriters. There's usually geese too, but don't worry about them. Let me give your ears a treat. Ooh, that sounds a bit weird. So that's Folkhampton, Thursdays, 5 p.m. on the mighty Radio Reverb 97.2. Okay, you can honk now.
You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM, Radio Reverb, with my colleague Lisa Moore. And you can catch the show on 97.2 FM on DAB or to download and listen as a podcast. And we are working in conjunction with Friday Media Group, who are our partners, and they are supporting, and we are supporting, local business. So my final guest is Caroline Matanley. And Caroline is the corporate and community fundraiser for Whoops-a-Daisy. So welcome to the business show, Caroline.
Thank you very much.
Now, just that Lisa, one, because you've got a connection with each other, haven't you?
Oh, we have. Yes, we have. So Caroline is one of my lovely Athena Network members and joined us in the middle of the pandemic last year as one of our members for our Hove group. And we've got to know each other over the last few months, and the amazing charity and the work they do. And I have to tell a funny story, actually, because Caroline and I both have dogs. We both have spaniels, and we decided that we would have a face-to-face meetup on the top of the South Downs. And we both got out the car and looked at each other and went, "I didn't know you were that tall." You sort of have a picture in your head of what they're going to be like, and both of us, including yourself, Helen, because you're fairly tall, but both of us are pretty tall. You're 5'9", 5'10". And it was just a shock. We both looked each other up and down and went, "Oh my goodness." It was quite funny, but we had a walk with our spaniels, who got on very well. and chatted and got to know each other. But Whoops the Daisies is a fantastic charity, and I'm going to leave Caroline to tell us more about what they do.
Well, it's great to have you, Caroline, on the show. So tell us about, I guess, what Whoops the Daisy is all about and your role within the charity.
Okay, so Whoops the Daisy is a very small little charity in Preston Park, and we teach children with cerebral palsy and other motor disorders a special method called conductive education, which is from Hungary. And it's all about trying to get the children to become more independent through their life skills, which we all take for granted. And before the pandemic, they used to come in little groups. We do Monday to Friday, we have children from 0 to 5, and they come in groups of 4 with their parent or grandmother or carer or whoever. And they come for a 2-hour session with the conductors, who are the teachers, who are both Hungarian, and they have a little session. And a lot of it is lots of fun. The children really don't actually know they're working incredibly hard, because the teachers do lots of singing and rewarding and just some amazing things with them. We use a lot of wooden apparatus for them. And so that's all free for the children. We don't charge anything. We do ask the parents if they can afford to give us a monthly donation to do that, but obviously if they can't, then it's all free. And then once the children reach the school age of 5, they can then come back on a Saturday without the parents, which is where we use our volunteers, who are obviously incredibly important for us. And the older children come back again in usually a group of 4. And it's not about age group, it's about their ability. So it might be a 3-year-old, not in the Saturday school, but it might be, a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, because it's all about how each child is so different. It's about their abilities, about what they can do, not about what they can't do. So, during the summer, we do a holiday club, and the children again come back. We do, that's usually for the older children, and they come back all day, with volunteers. And then we also do an Easter club as well, which, we haven't obviously done any of these during the pandemic, but this year we did do a sort of small one-to-one summer holiday club, because obviously during the pandemic, we did everything online via Zoom. And considering it's a hands-on method, you would have thought, or the girls thought, how on earth are we going to do that with our children? But in fact, it was really successful, because the girls were able to do it. They just had to explain a lot more and try with a sort of rag doll to explain how she wanted them to do the movement. But also we found that actually it was incredibly important for the parents as well, for the mental health reasons. Obviously being locked in your house with the disabled child is really, really, it was hard for everybody, but really hard for them. So that actually was really successful. And some of the parents, although we have now got children coming back, but we're doing it one-to-one, obviously because we have to keep them safe, because they're vulnerable. And if the parents don't want to come back and they feel they're not ready, then they carry on doing their Zoom sessions. Mm-hmm. So that's how we've sort of dealt with it over the... my job has been rather challenging, because obviously I haven't been able to do lots of events. So again, my events have been online. I've really only done things like quiz nights. I did quite a few of those, which were very successful actually, because obviously you can have, when I do it normally in the pub, I can only have 12 teams of 4. Whereas on Zoom, you can have, 50 people, it's fine. So they actually were really successful. And then we did we always have a summer party and a Christmas party for our families with a raffle. and we did our Christmas party, and I got our little entertainer, Mike. He came and did a Zoom session with the children, and they absolutely loved it. So it actually worked out all fine. The other lady that works with us, who does all our trusts and grants, she was amazing because she was able to do a lot of trusts and grants, you know, all the COVID ones. And so that's how we ended up getting most of our money during the pandemic, not through what obviously I couldn't do, but she was able. So she worked really hard, and that was fantastic. So we've been going for about, we've been going since 2008, and Whoopsie-Daisy was set up by a local lady actually called Nina Holland, and she's got three sons, and her middle son sadly had cerebral palsy, and she went out to Hungary and paid to have this treatment done privately and realised how expensive it was, and she realised that not everybody could afford to go and have these private sessions. So she, when she came back and saw how effective it had been for Christopher, that's when she decided, she fundraised £100,000 and she set up Whoopsie-Daisy.
Wow.
So that's how it all came about.
That's incredible. So, you know, I think the first thing there is about an alternative type of education that was found somewhere else that was brought back, and then people were trained on that. Is that...
It's quite difficult to get trained in this country. There is up north, I think it's in Birmingham or Manchester, there is a college where you can learn to become a conductor, and it takes about 4 years. It's quite a long time. But all the girls that we've ever had as conductors, they've all been Hungarian.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but I'm sure there are English conductors, but we've always only ever had Hungarian ones.
And you mentioned in terms of, because see, I think people are interested in third sector businesses and charities and things like that, and how, well, Furniture Now is obviously a different business model there in terms of the revenue is generated from the sales of furniture. And for your charity, the revenue is generated from, you say, things like trust and grants, but also from fundraising, which is your role. And so you say quizzes are one element of that. How, what other projects and things are
there? There's because it's only me, I am fundraising, so I don't have a team behind me. So quite a lot of people come to me and say, you know, I want to do an event for you. And so, I mean, just for an example, a few weeks ago, one of our mummies, who's a mummy to a little boy called Phoenix, said she hasn't been able to give us any monthly money because she's a single mum with twins. And she said, I want to run the 10K the Brighton Marathon. I said, okay, we'll buy your ticket. So we bought the ticket, and I said to her, how much do you think you're going to be able to raise? And she initially put on her target about £300. And I said, Natalie, you need to put your target much higher than that, double it. I said, doesn't matter if you don't get to that, but, you know, honestly, I think you'll get it. Anyway, she has raised £1,755.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's people like that who just come out of the blue and say, I've heard about your charity. You know, people, because we're in Preston Park, lots of people go past the park. And if they're athletic in any shape or form, another lady came to me who's a teacher, and during the summer holiday, she said, I like to do crazy things. I'm going to do three crazy things this week for you, like run 1 mile for 24 hours, every hour for 24 hours. She said, I'm going to go on my rowing machine for 8 hours. And then I think she got a bike machine. She was going to do cycling. And she raised about £600 for us.
Okay.
So there are lots of ways. And the other way I do is through companies. So corporate, we've got quite a few Charity of the Year people. So they help fundraise for us all year. So, and then what else? I mean, networking helps, because obviously that's how I spread the word, you know, with Athena, and I'm also a member of the Brighton Chamber.
Yes, yeah.
Which is also great.
Social media. Yeah, it's interesting to hear. So I can relate to that. So I lost my dad to pancreatic cancer. So I wanted to do something for pancreatic cancer. And I did a wing walk. And I raised £1,500 for that. And so I can see if it's something, the cause is, you know, there's a personal connection to
the cause. Yes, of course, always.
Then that person will choose that charity to raise money for. So it's just interesting to know, actually. So when I did that, I went online and I set up an account with pancreatic cancer, and then that was all done. How is that done if someone wants to do that? Say they want to do something crazy, they want to do a wing walk or an ab sale, or how would they set up an account so that people can sponsor them?
Well, the biggest platform that I use is JustGiving.
Okay, fab.
So yeah. I send them the information about Whoopsie-Daisy and how to set it up if they haven't done it before. And I say, just go on to JustGiving and set up an account. And then I share that, obviously, with Whoopsie-Daisy. And then that's how we do it.
I think that's actually how I did it with pancreatic cancer.
I think it's the biggest platform. I'm sure that I know there are lots of others, but that's the one that we use an awful lot.
Great. And then those funds just get transferred to the charity.
Actually, sadly, poor Natalie, who was going to do the 10K, the day, 10 days before, she got COVID and she wasn't allowed to do it. So what she's going to do, because she said she felt so guilty about it, and because she'd raised so much money for us, and she said, that's fantastic, but I really wanted to run it. So she's put a day aside in October, in a few weeks when she's feeling better, and she's still going to do it.
Oh, brilliant.
And she's going to run with little Phoenix the last mile. She wanted to do the last mile with Phoenix in a pushchair. So she was running with him, but obviously on wheels. And so she's still going to do that. But yes, the money comes directly to us, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for explaining that, because I know a lot of people, you know, would be interested to hear whether they want to fundraise for Whoopsie-Daisy, or just understanding how businesses run in this way, you know, how a charity runs in this way. It's, you know, it's, I think it's important to share that information, and also to get the word out about Whoopsie-Daisy, because there will be people that in the city that are touched by children who have cerebral palsy, and they don't know that this exists, or they don't have access or connection to it. So if people want to find out more, they want to take advantage of the services that you offer, how can they find out more about you, Caroline?
I think probably the first thing is to go onto our website, www.whoopsiedaisy.org. Definitely they'll find our phone number on there. They can ring up and speak to one of the conductors, and they can have a free assessment if they're worried about their child. And also what I should say is that we do also look at Down syndrome children, because they're quite delayed. And we used to have a little group of Down syndrome children, about four or five of them, that used to come every week. We don't have one at the moment, but all the children that we have, they're from all over Sussex. It's not necessarily just East Sussex. There is Dame Vera Lynn in West Sussex, but we're the only centre in East Sussex. And I think that's the best way, is to just look on our website and contact us that way.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Brighton Business Show today and sharing with us the great work that you're doing, and how you've managed to work through that during a pandemic as well, and make that work, which is absolutely incredible. So hats off to you for that, and thank you for sharing that. And I hope that people listening will get in touch with all of the guests that have been on today in terms of Furniture Now, Michael, If you want to get involved in supporting Rick and his campaign, or if you want to get involved in supporting Caroline and what the work she's doing at Whoops-a-Daisy. Really inspiring show. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming on. And we look forward to seeing you next month.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.